Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Now, distilling, as I understand it, is not a simple process, and I don't understand it, but that's why we're here. It involves a lot of machinery and gear and exact science, a lot of patience, but it's a fascinating topic with a long history behind it. We're going to delve into that on this program, on this Food Friday, kind of a loosely termed Food Friday today. John Curtin and Matthew Jager started the Albany Distilling Company in 2012, right next door to the Albany Pump Station. They're known for Coal Yard, New Make Whiskey, Ironweed Aged Whiskey, and Quackenbush Stillhouse Rum. They have both done a lot of distilling, perhaps a little drinking as well, and they know their spirits. Alejandro Del Peral started the Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany this year. It was the first licensed cidery in the state of New York.
Farm cidery.
I'm sorry, what?
Farm cidery.
First licensed farm cidery, and we'll talk about that distinction in a moment. And it was just after Governor Cuomo signed the new cidery licensing law in February. It produces locally made nine-pin cider, and it's good stuff. If you have a question for these guys about distilling, spirits, cider, or other beverages, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us in these ways. Ready? Email voxpop@wamc.org. Twitter at WAMC Vox Pop, Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There's a Vox Pop post there. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, WAMC.org/Vox Pop. But we love your calls here. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gentlemen, nice to have you on the show today, and thanks for bringing the cider. This is really delicious. What are we drinking here?
We're drinking a nine-pin ginger. Mm. It's a farmhouse blend of apples, all grown from some Ascot orchards, fermented out, and then infused with ginger and orange peels.
Okay.
We like to say it's a beautiful breakfast drink.
Okay. You know, you're talking to a radio person, and so I might be amenable to that sort of thing. All right, Alejandro, you corrected me and said it was the first farm
cidery.
Okay, now what's the difference?
So there are many cideries currently in New York State, all producing great cider. So we're not the first cidery in the state. But what we are is the first licensed farm cidery. And our operation is different from other cideries because we are not located on the orchard from where we source our fruit. We have a warehouse in North Albany, amongst the other industrial buildings there, where we ferment and package our hard cider. And we source all the apples from local orchards. But because our cidery is not located on the farm, we were not able to apply for what's called a farm winery license. And other cider producers in the state are operating under a farm winery license and making hard cider. So we were initially producing cider under a cider producer license. And then we obtained the farm cidery license, which allows us to do things like have a tasting room and other benefits as well.
And you can also then presumably pick and choose where you get your apples from.
All the apples are by law need to come from New York State, but that's not difficult to do. We have so many apples around here.
Yeah. Anyway, so and it's a wonderful product. And what is the alcohol content of this?
It's around 6.7%.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we say it's dangerously easy to drink.
So is there a limit as far as what the regulations say as far as strength goes?
In New York State, it's 8.5%. Beyond that, we need a wine license to produce it, and it needs to be labeled as apple wine. At the federal level, it's 7%.
I see. And the list of ingredients, you can do whatever you want?
We're essentially winemakers that use apples, but with the freedom to experiment like a craft brewer, so we can use whatever we want.
Yep. Delicious product, Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany. Also joined here today by John Curtin and Matthew Jager, and the Albany Distilling Company. You made quite a splash when you started a couple of years ago now, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, on the round table, we got a bottle of your moonshine-like product. Brand new, basically, no aging. And so we learned a little at that time about it.
Well, we say it's not aged, but technically, legally, in order to call it whiskey, it does have to spend some time in a barrel. That's the federal regulation regarding the label whiskey. So that spends 30 minutes in a barrel.
30 minutes.
30 minutes, yeah.
So what I learned when Joe and I did that segment was that the character, the color, the flavor really comes from the barrel. Mm-hmm. I never knew. So all whiskey, when it's distilled, looks like that first day whiskey.
Whiskey is the product of collected steam. You know, anything that comes off the still, even the rum we make, goes in as thick black molasses, comes off crystal clear, because there's no physical connection between what goes into the pot and what comes out at the end. It's just a steam that's condensed.
So what have you learned in 2 years now that you've been running? What craft skills have you gained from experience?
We started from zero. I mean, we really went into this without any experience, and we had to teach ourselves how to use the equipment. I mean, we really sort of started from first of all, how is whiskey made? We didn't even really know process.
All right. Stop pointing fingers and somebody answer the question. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a question.
So whiskey starts off as grain.
Okay.
The first, you know, we follow a litany of federal rules regarding how whiskey is produced.
All right.
Rule number one is whiskey must be made from 100% grain.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to sort of branch off here. There are four types of American whiskey. Bourbon, rye, malt, and wheat.
Okay.
And these are the really protected types of American whiskey. Of those, we make three kinds. We make bourbon, we make rye, and we make malt. So that's what I'm going to talk about.
So malt would be Scotch?
So that's a whole other branch. I'll talk about that in a minute. But in the United States, so the first rule is it has to be made from 100% grain. The second rule is one of those grains must make up the majority of the recipe.
Right.
Bourbon, for example, must be mostly corn.
Okay.
Rye, mostly rye. Malt, mostly malted barley. And then wheat, mostly wheat.
Okay.
Now, the third rule is when it comes off the still, it can never be above 80% alcohol. So we have to distill it at, you know, 78, 79%.
And how do you adjust that?
Through the equipment. We can adjust the temperature that we heat the mash at. We can adjust the level of rectification that occurs in the still itself. We can adjust the rate at which we cool the steam down, which affects the whole dynamic of how the still operates. It's not hard to do.
So 80% is the max?
The top,
so it's 160 proof?
Exactly.
But you wouldn't sell that.
Correct.
As such.
Right, which leads me to the next rule, which is it must then go into a barrel. The barrel must be brand new. It must be made from American white oak. It must be charred on the inside. And the whiskey can go into that barrel at no higher than 125 proof or 62.5% alcohol.
So how do you, would you water it down?
Exactly. Yeah, we call it blending it down, but it's just diluting it essentially.
So why white oak? Strike me that there may be some other woods that would make nice barrels as well.
There are. And in fact, you know, white oak is only required for whiskeys. I mean, for wine, you can use French oak, you can use Hungarian, you can use red, whatever. Part of the reason there are so many rules is to keep whiskey consistent. Whiskey was obviously huge before Prohibition in the United States. Once Prohibition hit, it became a much, you know, obviously, it wasn't stopped being produced in the United States. There were four distilleries allowed to remain open for medicinal whiskey.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But by and large, whiskey production was halted in the United States.
Right.
To compensate for this, people began to make it on their own. And
there's the so-called bathtub booze.
Exactly. So, if you're making whiskey on your own, it's going to come out clear because that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't used to clear whiskey, so they would add nails and the rust would color it, or they would add paint, or who, you know.
Delicious.
Exactly. They would adulterate it in all sorts of ways, which would give the appearance of color. And in order to regain that lost prestige, the rules were made very strict in order to, you know, to recover from the 15 years of terrible hooch that was being produced.
Yeah.
So white oak is, in particular, has a lot of lignin. And when lignin is toast, which occurs during the charring process, it converts to a compound called vanillin. And vanillin, you want to guess what vanillin tastes like?
Sure.
So there's a lot that happens in the barrel in addition to that, but all these things combined are what make whiskey taste how we expect it to.
Fascinating. So when you guys use your barrels, you then save them and they become prized. If you have a good batch, you say, this is a prized barrel, we use this over and again or over again, or you just get rid of them?
Like John mentioned, the rule is that whiskey has to be, the bourbon, rye, malt, or wheat whiskey has to be aged in a brand new barrel. So after we've used it one time, we cannot use it again for one of those products.
Now, that sounds like not a good idea.
Well, We often compare the barrel to a tea bag. You know how, like, you can make a second cup of tea from that tea bag, but you're never going to get quite the flavor.
You can't rechar it and use it again?
You can. So you can rechar the barrel, but it's impractical to do it. And we have a great use for our used barrels, which is aging our rum. So the rum that we make, we sell in the unaged form, but then we also sell it aged. And when we age it in our used whiskey barrels.
You know, I remember reading a story, and by the way, the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551 if you want to join in. I'll relate this somewhat uninteresting story after we take a break. Zach, 1-800-348-2551. We talk hard cider. We talk booze. Your questions coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from The Meat Market, Stockbridge Road, Great Barrington, Nose to Tail Butcher Shop and Cafe, featuring locally grown, pasture-raised meats and house-made charcuterie, serving lunch Wednesday through Sunday, themeatmarketgb.com. Sundog Cider at Sulaqua, locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York, sundogcider.com. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, 518-580-8080. And Miss Hall School, a boarding and day school for girls in grades 9 through 12, now accepting applications for September 2014. What girls have in mind, misshalls.org.
Okay, so we have the lockbox at the website, wamc.org. The fund drive starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Alan will sit down and we'll get started with the on-air fund drive. Now, we've done the lockbox for the last month or so. The goal was to reach the $325,000 mark in that lockbox. If we hit that, it triggers a $25,000 bonus, if you will, from an anonymous donor we call Mr. Big out of Connecticut, who will give us, again, $25,000 if we hit $325,000 by the beginning of the drive. As of just before this show started, we were at $311,000. That gives us $13,000 to go. No, am I wrong, Zach? 14 to go. That's right. I'm in radio. I have to count like this. So if you can make a pledge now in the lockbox, A, we get that goal. B, we shorten the on-air fund drive. And so this is a good thing. WAMC.org. Either way, the fund drive starts on Monday morning at 6 o'clock. We talk liquor. We talk booze, hooch, whatever you want to call it, with John Curtin and Matthew Jager of Albany Distilling Company, and also hard cider from Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany. And, you know, we were talking about barrels for whiskey. And I remember a story, I read it. One of the big brewers, I think it was the Pappy Van people, Pappy Van Winkle, and they would take barrels and put them in different spots in their whatever their facility was, based on light and altitude, you know, some were on the second floor, some were on the third floor. They thought that all made a difference. Are you finding, as you are now growing into this business, little things like that make a difference?
Our space is a little bit smaller than the rickhouse at their distillery is likely to be. Actually, it's funny. People often ask us that when they take the tour. They've heard about rotating the barrels.
Yeah.
So people always ask us, do you have to rotate the barrels? And they think that means, you know, rotating them in place, like, you know, flipping it upside down or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you hear about rotating the barrels, what that means is at these bigger distilleries where they have massive, you know, their rickhouses are the size of our entire distillery, mm-hmm. there will be these drastic fluctuations in temperature and humidity, you know, from the northeast corner on the fourth floor to the southwest corner on the ground floor. It'll be pretty different. So the big distilleries, you know, Beam and the Pappy Van Winkle distillery, they'll rotate the barrels through the whole building to make sure that they age somewhat consistently, or they might hold a special reserve from the part of the building that gives the best flavor, the part where the temperature fluctuations result in the best flavor.
Very interesting. Here's one from email. This is from Scott, who says, I heard that Canadian whiskey is aged in barrels that can be reused. Supposedly, that is why the Canadian whiskeys are smoother. Any truth to that?
Well, every country has different regulations. So it's sort of unique to American whiskey that we have to use new barrels every time. Scotch, for example, is all used barrels. Irish whiskey is all used barrels. And Canadian whiskey, you know, they can be mixed. The advantage to a used barrel is that since that really oak-heavy character has been removed, you can leave whiskey in it for a longer period of time without risking over-oaking it.
Okay, now over-oaking. This leads to Scott's second question. What are the benefits of aging the whiskey longer in the barrels?
As there are a few things that happen while the whiskey is sitting in the barrel. There are four. Number one, like John mentioned earlier, the color comes over from the barrel, and the flavors, like those vanillas that come from the vanillins, also a sweet caramel shows up. The inside of the barrel, since it's charred, it actually works the same way that the charcoal in a Brita filter does, and it actually smooths the spirit out over time.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer the spirit sits in the barrel, the more it's going to benefit from that smoothing effect.
Up to a point, right?
Yes. I mean, and the way that we compensate for that is by putting a very smooth spirit into the barrels at our distillery, because we know that they're only going to age for, right now, you know, for a short period of time. And then the last thing that happens, and this is where we can't make it up, is that the flavor continues to develop over time, because these barrels, they breathe as they're sitting on those racks, and that oxygen, as it penetrates the spirit, it oxidizes various compounds in the spirit, and it actually develops flavors over time that are not present in the spirit that you put in the barrel. So when you taste these you know, these spicy flavors, these clove, these, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done a winery tasting, and you know, they'll give you these crazy tasting notes, and then you taste it and you're like, holy, I really taste this stuff.
Yeah.
Those are flavors.
And thank you for not swearing.
That was,
good catch, by the way.
You know, those flavors, those develop over time. So these are the benefits of barrel aging a spirit. The longer you age it, the longer those flavors will continue to develop. The downside is that it's going to continue to evaporate that whole time, too.
So it'll evaporate the alcohol first? So it'll get weaker, in theory, over time?
I mean, depending on the humidity in the environment where the barrel is sitting, sometimes a little more alcohol will evaporate, sometimes a little more water will evaporate. But we call this the angel share. And the overall loss is can be pretty dramatic.
All right, let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. We go to Danny in Massachusetts. You're up, Danny.
Hi there. My question has to do with cider. I've done home brewing a couple times, but I've always been interested in trying to make a cider. So I was wondering what type of apples would be a good apple to go for, or maybe a blend of apples. And how many apples would I need to, say, make a 5-gallon batch or something around that amount?
Well, to answer your first question, in general, the bigger the blend, the more complex the resulting fermented juice will be. So at this time of year, it's kind of difficult to find a lot of big diversity of apples, but during the fall, you'd shoot for getting, you know, at least 7 to 10 varieties in. You want to think about things like acid content and sugars. You want to make sure you're going to have enough sourness to produce a balanced cider in the final product. So, you know, mixing in things like McIntosh and Granny Smith, something that has a more sour flavor profile, will help you out. The second question, how many apples for a 5-gallon batch of cider? Again, it depends on when you're pressing during the fall, in the variety, obviously. But the typical calculation is about a bushel gives you 3 gallons of juice, and a bushel weighs about 40 pounds. So if you're if you're thinking a 5-gallon batch, you would need about 60 pounds of apples.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. All right, Alejandro, take us into the process with which you make 9-pin cider. Presumably, it's the same as making regular non-alcoholic cider to start, right?
Right. So just like a fresh pressed sweet juice, we get, you know, we basically buy apples and have them pressed at the orchards, Semascot Orchard and Kinderhook being the primary source. We transfer that juice to our cidery, and just like a winery does, we ferment fruit. So it is a winemaking process. There's no brewing involved. A lot of people come in and say, you know, can I have, you know, who's the brewer? And it's like, brewing involves heating. We don't heat anything up. We produce an apple wine.
With natural carbonation?
We force carbonate.
You do?
Yes.
So if you didn't do that, it would be fairly flat?
It would be still.
It really would?
It stores, in our cider right now, we have cider which is completely still, in the same way wine is.
Now, I heard you mention a variety of apples. So I assume that if you use a wide variety of apples every time, it sort of you can sort of tailor the flavor, make it consistent batch to batch. But do you ever try something akin to what a single malt scotch would be, where you use one type of apple?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, yeah, we do. We've done a lot of experiments with, we call them single variety ciders. So in the same way you get a single varietal wine like a cab, or you can do the same thing with cider. So we in the cidery right now are working with a few varieties, Granny Smith being one of them.
So they're more sour?
Yeah, nice tart flavor profile, you know, interesting aromas. And so, it, you know, cider making has all those great things that go into winemaking. So variety plays a role. And terroir, which orchard you get it from, can influence the flavor as well.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Alejandro Del Peral, John Curtin, and Matthew Jaeger. Let's go to Sarah in Albany. Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Sarah from Albany. I had a question. I was wondering what the differences were for cider fermentation and beer fermentation. What makes cider cider and beer beer?
Beer is a heated, they buy the grains, they heat it. I'm not a brewer by any means, so brewers out there, don't get upset.
Okay.
Butcher this. But basically, my understanding is they buy grains, they heat it up and produce, they extract the sugars from the grains, and then they ferment that into what is beer. Cider is like wine. We take fresh fruit, we press it, and and then we ferment it without any heating involved. Does that answer your question?
That sounds really cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sarah. We appreciate the call. Have you guys ever worked together? In other words, Applejack?
Where?
That's good stuff.
Well,
but that's distilled, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Technically speaking, jacking is a process that involves freezing as opposed to heating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So jacking is taking a cider, for example, cooling it, at which point the water will freeze before the alcohol does, removing that ice, and what you're left with is you know, a purified alcohol. Now, the problem with that is a lot of the volatiles that we distill out, aldehydes, ether, also stuff you don't want to drink, stuff that would make you go blind, which is where, you know, moonshine gets its bad name. Jacking doesn't remove any of those because they have, similar to alcohol, very low freezing points.
Mm-hmm.
So they remain in there. So colloquially, Applejack refers to apple brandy now, because very, very few people actually jack apple cider.
Okay.
I've done it by accident in my freezer a couple times, actually.
Did you try it?
Yeah, it concentrates all the flavors. And
how's the hangover?
The hangover's brutal. Yeah.
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 But so you can't do a traditional distilling process and maintain any of the character of the apples?
No, we can't. It'd be called apple brandy, I guess. I was just being pedantic there.
Okay, let's go to Sean in Dalton, Mass. Sean, you're up.
Yes, hi guys, how you doing?
Good.
Great. I have a question regarding what's called the Angel Share that you just mentioned a couple minutes ago. I am currently aging some tequila in a barrel that was previously used for grappa. It's a 5-liter barrel, and just to try it out my first time, I put in one bottle of tequila, 3/4 of a liter. And after about 3 months, and only tasting 3 ounces of it over those 3 months, I discovered the bottle of the barrel was empty.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a thief, or can I lose that much?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of things that can affect how much will be remaining in the barrel when you go to open it. I mean, first of all, it depends on how dry that barrel was. The Angel Share is kind of the accumulation of not just evaporation, but also leakage and absorption into the oak.
I'm pretty certain I didn't have anything leaking out of the barrel before I put the tequila in the barrel. It was full of water a couple weeks.
Yep.
So the wood would plump up and the steam seal.
If the barrel wasn't, you said you had only partially filled it, like less
yeah,
than...
Yeah, only 3/4 of a liter in a 5-liter barrel.
Right, so it's likely that the upper staves, the ones that weren't in contact with liquid, might have dried out a little bit. And when the staves get a bit dry, then that gap between the staves becomes larger enough for you know, evaporation to be kind of accelerated a bit.
Okay, so it's conceivable, you think, that in 3 months I could have pretty much lost that whole bottle?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Really? Wow, okay. Well, good to know.
Yeah.
So I should maybe just fill that barrel right up then.
Yeah, top it up. It'll keep it'll keep the staves completely swollen the whole time, so you won't lose it through those cracks between the staves. You know, keep an eye. Even if you just see a very small like a wet spot underneath, and you might kind of, you know, just ignore it. If it's leaking, you know, a drip a day for a long time adds up, and you, if you see a leak, you might want to rotate the barrel so that the
evaporate before I noticed it, I guess, probably.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Have you guys ever, what I did is I just took regular, I took Milagro Silver right out of the bottle and put it in this barrel to kind of turn it into a Reposado.
Nice.
Is that a, does that sound like an appropriate technique to just try and age the tequila a little more?
Yeah, it sounds fun, man. I mean, right. we do fun experiments like that all the time.
We actually sell small barrels for people to do at home with our unaged whiskey. Yeah.
All right. Good to know, because I'll probably want to start doing more barrels once I figure out that I like what it's doing.
Yeah, we call it, we have this age it yourself kit where we sell a 2-liter barrel and 3 bottles of our unaged whiskey, so you can take it home and age your own bourbon or age your own rye whiskey.
Fascinating.
Yep.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sean. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the craft beer craze began, and I recall a brewer in Albany in the mid-80s, the Newman's Brewery, and he was one of the first, and beer is taking off. Cider is taking off. Distilling, that is taking off too, but it's a little later to the game. How many smaller distillers are there now in this country?
We actually, New York State after Washington State has the, we have the second most by number across the country, and it is taking off at pretty much the same trajectory that craft brewing did. If you were to plot the graphs and, you know, take out the 20 years that separate them, we're really following that trajectory.
Now, of course, with beer, many people try their hand at home brewing. Not too many people try home distilling. Is it even legal to do?
It's not.
It's not legal.
No, you'd be surprised how many people come to the tour and pull a jar out of their backpack.
Really? And say, try this?
Yeah, some people just don't have a filter, and they just start talking about stuff that they do at home. And we love hearing about it. We're not going to, you know,
turn them in.
Advocate anything.
So it's not legal at all. In other words, you can't set up your own. I'm sure the parts would be available.
It is very simple chemistry. I mean, it's really not a lot of moving parts.
Now, is this a throwback to the prohibition, or is this just people, the government saying, well, this isn't quite safe if you do it wrong?
What's that stuff the government loves?
Money.
Well, that's it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's yes. the stuff. Yes. 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 I remember very well.
Yeah. We have a pretty hefty tax we pay.
Yeah.
It's called, you know, basically it's our most expensive cost per bottle is federal tax.
Hmm.
So home distilling is a lot of revenue free booze. So it is very much illegal.
Even the jacking process, which John mentioned earlier, if you do that, you're breaking the law.
Even inadvertently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you do it inadvertently.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jason in Chatham. Jason, you're up.
Hello. I just wanted to say hello to Alejandro. He's a former student of mine. Had him back when he was in eighth grade.
Well, all right.
Hi, Alejandro.
Mr. Khan?
This is. How are you?
How you doing?
I just wanted to say, one, I have tried 9-pin, and I think it's wonderful. And I heard an interesting report, and they said that the market for hard cider versus things like wine and even microbrewed beer is much bigger than, the growth potential is much bigger than microbrewed beers and wine. Is this simply because hard cider is just beginning to open up, or has this always been the case?
It's hard to read into those statistics because it's, you know, those numbers are based on basically zero. I mean, cider is unpopular, or has been basically unpopular since Prohibition, and it's just now gaining popularity. So any growth is like, you know, cider grew by 400% in New York State, but it grew from like 4 cideries to 22 cideries. You know, something.
Yeah.
It's not,
okay.
Yeah.
You got to learn to spin the numbers a little better.
Right.
I thought that might be it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it is gaining in popularity. There's a lot of things driving, you know, the market for it. And especially in New York State, where everyone is surrounded by apples, that I think it's got a lot of potential to grow. And, you know, it's a nice light alternative to other, you know, categories. And it's gluten-free. And
it's delicious.
And delicious, yeah.
Jason,
and
thanks.
One more question, and I'll ask you something. Last year's apple crop, I've never seen anything like it, and it was all over the Northeast. It was ubiquitous. Any thoughts you have on that? I'd be interested in hearing.
Yeah, it was actually, I think, the biggest crop on record. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure. It actually has to do with the previous year. I don't know if you remember, but 2012's apple crop was one of the worst in New York's record. And what happens is an apple tree sets its fruit the year before for the next season. So because there were no apples the previous year, every single tree, including wild ones in orchards, basically prepared themselves to have a full crop the next year. So we had just a perfect growing conditions and full sets on the tree.
Well, it was a great year. Thank you very much, and good luck, Alejandro.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Jason. We appreciate the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We talk more distilling, more hard cider coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to our neighbors. HudsonValleyFresh.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. around City Hall. SchenectadyGreenMarket.org. Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. And Berkshire International Film Festival, now through June 1st, May in the summer, Battered Bastards of Baseball, Trip to Italy, plus 75 films and events, BIFFMA.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. A Food Friday, a little off base today, but not too far. We talk distilling, we talk hard cider, and John Curtin is here, Matthew Jaeger from the Albany Distilling Company, Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany also here. You brought a ginger cider. What are some of the craziest blends you've tried so far, Alejandro?
I mean, the ginger one was initially actually one of the craziest ones. Our first, I mean, we've been working on dialing it in, basically the recipe, but our first take on it was so overly gingered, so strong. We had an older woman walk into our tasting room, and we poured her the first try of it, and she was all excited about it, and she didn't even drink it, she just smelled it, and it just sent her into this coughing fit.
Oh wow.
She buckled her, she was down on her
satisfied
knees.
Satisfied customer.
Yeah,
eh?
Right. Yeah. And so I she gets down on her knees and is coughing, and I'm thinking, oh man, I killed her.
You didn't kill her though, right?
No, I didn't. She sort of emerges out of this fit, eyes tearing, and proceeds to consume 3 or 4 glasses of it. She said she loved it.
Just put a little warning label on it, and you're good to go. Now, are you guys allowed to ship outside of the state? I'll start with you, Alejandro.
We can, but we need to have the distribution license to do it. We don't have any real plans of doing that.
Keep it local.
Yeah, it's about local.
How about
local
the booze?
Produce.
Yeah, we can. We would have to do the same thing. You just have to negotiate distribution state by state, but we don't need to. We don't have to go very far to sell everything we make.
Well, are there different state laws that you would have to adhere to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some states you have to sell, they have state-operated liquor stores, so you're dealing with the government. Some states, like our state, is a three-tier state. There's the law is very greatly from state to state.
The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Go to Dawn in Saratoga. Dawn.
Hello, this is Dawn calling from Saratoga.
Hello, Dawn.
I wanted to ask Alejandro why he decided to make Albany his Nine Pin home.
Well, it's sort of a combination of two things. One, it is my home. I grew up just outside of the city here, so I've got a lot of personal attachment to this area and love to see things happening here. But secondly, Albany is just conveniently located right in the middle of the second biggest apple crop in the entire country. A lot of people don't realize exactly how many apples there are, but it is impressive to get out there and actually see the fields and the orchards and see the volume of fruit that's grown right here in the capital region.
Well, I have to say, I wish you were in Saratoga.
Come to Albany.
I'll try.
Thanks, Dawn. Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Nick in Shelburne, Vermont. Nick, you're on.
Yes, I have a question. You were talking about the aldehydes in the Jack cider. Given that there's the same amount of alcohol in a glass of hard cider and as there would be in a shot of Jack cider, why is there aldehydes in the Jack and not in the hard cider?
Well, there actually are aldehydes in the hard cider, but they get a part of the aging process. They dissipate with time, but a freshly fermented hard cider actually does have some pretty high concentration, depending on the yeast used, but has some pretty high concentrations of aldehydes. Can give you a pretty killer headache if you.
Is that what causes the hangover?
In an unaged, youngly fermented.
Yeah,
cider,
I didn't
yes.
know that.
Yep,
you can get a good headache from drinking hard cider.
For a young one.
I
yep.
guess you can.
Yeah, a young one.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, the distillation side of it, I don't know. That's for you guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we distill a spirit, like when we distill a hard cider, when we make our cuts, we'll remove those things that come off at the beginning. We call it the heads. That's why, you know, a lot of distillers, they say once you get into this, you never look at a glass of beer or a pint of cider the same way because you know what's in there. And, right. and you know, I mean, if you drink enough of anything, you're going to get a nice headache. We're not giving you a no headache guarantee with our whiskey.
All right, fair enough.
No headache guarantee.
Well, let's go back to the phone. By the way, before we go to the phones, let's talk gin, one of my personal favorites. You guys have any ambitions to branch into gin?
Nothing immediate.
Really?
I mean,
too difficult?
No, it's actually, we initially planned a broad variety of spirits because we have the equipment, so why not? But the unexpected and not wholly unwelcome surprise we had was that we are struggling to meet demand even with the relatively limited range of products we do make.
What's your most popular?
The Ironweed Rye has been a great
seller. Rye is becoming more popular these days.
But really, everything we make sells, you know, pretty much immediately. So we're so busy trying to keep pace with demand as it is that we can't afford the time to do R&D for gin.
Also, we like to be, you know, kind of inspired. We don't want to just do something because it's on the list of things to do. So before we will create a gin, we will spend a long time playing around with the recipes. And we like to find connections between the products that we make and the area. So we'll, you know, for the variety of botanicals that we have in this area, we'll really play around with the recipe before we start making one.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And John in Pittstown. John, you're on.
Hi, I have a question regarding absinthe.
Oh, good question.
Your guests have any advice or information regarding absinthe and what variety of Artemis might be needed, et cetera, et cetera.
Wormwood is off the table now, right?
No, Wormwood's actually back on the table.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of the sort of mythology and mystique surrounding absinthe has more to do with the adulterants that were used in the 19th century in addition to alcohol.
Such as?
Camphor, all sorts of weird, you know, I mean, this is, you know, drug laws, so whatever, you know, heroin, whatever they want to put in there, they could just use as part and parcel of the recipe. And often the side effects or ill effects of absinthe were attributed to the wormwood, which, as it turns out, is not the case.
Really?
Yes.
So is it legal now?
It is, absolutely. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
And is it being produced commercially?
It's being produced. There are only one or two New York State absinthes, spirits.
Just go with the Latin. Go with the Latin version.
But there are quite a few nationally being made, and now you can get Pernod now making their absinthe again. It's one of the similar to the way rye is seeing an uptick in sales and popularity. Absinthe as well in the past 5-10 years is really gaining steam, no pun intended. But there really are if you're into absinthe, there's a lot of culture out there revolving around it. Absinthe drinkers are a pretty
pretentious lot.
I don't know if that would go that far.
Eccentric, maybe.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
And there's a great absinthe being made right downstate by a small distillery called Delaware Phoenix. It's been getting a lot of attention.
What's that name again? Delaware?
Delaware Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
And using a traditional method? Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. That's great. Now, Pernod, you mentioned that. Do they use the original sort of wormwood method?
Yeah, as far as I know, they do. I mean, a lot.
It's delicious stuff.
It is, and it's again, you know, absinthe is also traditionally served, or bottled, I should say, at 70 or 80% alcohol. So again, a lot of that mystique around it and how it intoxicates very quickly and very thoroughly, really has more to do with being double the strength of what people are used to drinking as well. So it's really, you know, there's the wormwood really is the, you know, the boogeyman. It doesn't really do anything.
The interesting thing about that stuff is
it's not a hallucinogen.
It's not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he says. But the interesting thing I've noticed is you
put it
on a piece of ice and it changes color.
Yeah. So that's called, well, what's happening is a lot of the flavor compounds in particular are hydrophobic, which means they don't like water, but they hide very well in alcohol. And so a spirit can look crystal clear, but as you water it down, in terms of watering absinthe down, it's specifically called louching, just adding water to absinthe. Since it lowers the concentration of alcohol, all of those chemicals and flavors and things that are hiding in the alcohol get chased out into the water, which clouds it up. Same thing happens with whiskey, in fact.
Did not know that.
Yep.
Are there any barrels that you guys have put aside and said, well, this is good, we're going to save this for a 20-year-old down the road?
We have the very first barrel that we ever filled, which we call the Founder's Barrel, which we say we're going to empty when we pay off our loans. So, never.
Well, maybe that'll help you pay off your loans.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I remember trying the first day stuff or the 20-minute aged.
The new make. Mm-hmm.
It's a tough thing to drink.
You know, we really put that one's intended as a mixer. It kind of caught us by surprise at our grand opening. People were coming in and they were snatching it up, armloads of it, and just running out without getting to hear an explanation of what it really is. And it's intended as a mixer.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling me now. Joe Donahue and I tried some sips on that day, and it was...
You know, we offer it. It's always the first thing that we offer in the tasting that we do at the distillery following a tour. And if you come in and take a tour and learn about how we make the whiskey and then you get to taste that, it really brings it to life. You really can appreciate the flavor of the spirit as it comes off the still. But, you know, we don't even just – that's not a sipping whiskey. It's not something that we just, you know, sit down and sip on at home. But
that's a good plan.
Throw a little Saranac ginger beer on that, and it's amazing.
What about some of this ginger cider?
Yeah, actually, Alejandro over at his place, he offers the Coulard with his sweet cider, and that's another amazing mixer.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. In general, smaller operations like you guys do, hands-on, you're all over all the details. What is the main difference in the manufacturing process between what you guys do, especially in the distillery, to what the big guys do?
Well, we are a true small batch craft distillery. So when we are doing a run, it has a beginning and an end. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the cuts that we make. This is part of the craft of distilling. You go to the big distilleries, even some of the bigger little distilleries, and they're running what are called continuous columns or they're exercising continuous distillation. And it just keeps on going. And you do lose a certain amount of control over what's coming off the still when you use that type of equipment. If you're barrel aging everything, the barrel, like I mentioned earlier, it will smooth the spirit out over time. So,
I thought all whiskey had to be barrel aged.
Yes, yeah, but so that's what I'm saying is if you know that you're going to put it into a barrel, you can be a little sloppy, or you can run a continuous still, and you can count on the barrel removing some of those things that we wouldn't leave in there. When we make our cuts, we make very, very careful cuts to make sure that what goes into the barrel is something that, you know, like you said before, it has a bit of an unusual flavor, but it's not harsh. This is the primary difference between a real small batch craft distillery and the mass produced stuff.
Do you make it a point, and I know Alejandro has said there's no point in using any apples other than those around here because there are so many, but do you guys at the Albany Distilling Company make a point to use local grains?
Like he is a farm cidery, we are a farm distillery. So we also have the requirement in our license that we use at least 75% New York State grain in our mm-hmm. in our products. We use 100% New York State grain, and we're very proud to say that we're supporting New York State farmers as fully as we can. We buy most of our grain right now from the Finger Lakes region because that's simply where there's an abundance of small grain being grown. But we're working with farmers in the Schoharie Valley and in the Huddleberg Hill Towns and closer to where we are to produce this stuff for us.
Do you mix them up, or will you just take a batch of grain from a certain farm and make your barrels, or do you mix grains to get a homogeneous sort of
Our recipe for our bourbon, for example, involves four separate grains. So we will end up buying the grains that go into a single batch from different farmers.
And how long is your regular bourbon aged?
Well, when we started, we were using 10-gallon barrels, and we were only aging it for 3 months, you know, for obvious reasons. We needed to get something out the door and keep the lights on, and we wouldn't have barreled it, or we wouldn't have bottled it if we weren't completely proud of that 3-month whiskey. But we've kind of gotten older and older, and our whiskeys we're able to mature them a bit more. We've moved up to 6 months, and by the end of the year, all of our whiskey is going to be coming off at all of 1 year old. But
can you tell the difference?
It's a really different flavor that you get. We never say one's better or worse than the other. We often have people come in and ask us if they can still get a bottle of the 3 month old stuff, and we don't age it that young anymore. But it's different.
Let's go back to the phones. Eric in Amherst. Eric, you're on.
Yes, I'm curious about the actual cost these days of starting up the young distillery. As I understood it before, you had to put like $250,000 up in escrow with the federal government for taxes in advance, give them your recipe and adhere to it strictly. You couldn't have clear liquor. They finally allowed some clear liquor to go through or something like that. But how hard was it to actually get the permits?
All right.
And how much did you have to put down cash up front?
The bond that you're referring to, it had previously been a pretty high bond requirement, but the farm distillery license that we received has no bond requirement, and I'm sure that Alejandro found that.
Same for cider.
These farm licenses are making it easier for smaller producers to get in. You know, some of those older legacy licenses were intended for huge industrial operations.
Were those intended to keep out little operations, to keep the big operations big?
I just don't think that they...
That's what it kind of smells like, is that the big boys keep the little guys out. I mean, in that new law in Kentucky, which they're considering repealing, which defines Kentucky whiskey, and it has to adhere to a brand which Jack Daniel's has put forward as their Kentucky whiskey. And if you don't have that, the other distilleries are going, what do we call it? Whiskey that's distilled in Kentucky.
Sure.
Opposed to Kentucky whiskey, but that's looked at and repealed. Are you up with all this stuff? Or
if you're afraid of paperwork, or if you don't have a tolerance for ridiculous laws, you should not get into this business. but, you know, I mean, we've learned to say, yes, sir, may I please have another over the last couple of years. But, you know, to be honest, New York State has made our lives a lot easier over the last couple of years. You know, creating.
That's really good to hear. Yep. I'm glad to hear that, because otherwise, I mean, it just makes the moonshining that much more justifiable.
Yeah.
You know?
No. I mean, creating the licenses that we received, reducing regulations, reducing fees on us, just making it easier for us to make our products and to get them to market.
Well, I'm glad to see your product out there, and thank you for making the effort.
Thanks so much.
Eric, thank you for the call. All right, let's get the websites here. Gentlemen, we'll start with the Albany Distilling Company.
Just albanydistilling.com.
Albanydistilling.com.
Yep. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us, info@albanydistilling, or our phone number is 518-621-7191.
Well done. Professionally done. How about Nine Pin Cider Works?
Same thing, ninepincider.com. It's currently down.
What happened?
I don't know. I tried this morning. but it should be back up soon. Joe's ensuring that. Well, and we're open today, tomorrow, till 9 o'clock, tasting room.
All right. Well, listen, gentlemen, thank you so much. We learned a lot today, and we really appreciate you being here. Don't forget the lockbox in operation all weekend long at our website, wamc.org. We're trying to hit the 325,000 mark before the fun drive begins at 6 a.m. Either way, we hope you are with us next week for the fun drive. Support comes from the Bee's Knees Cafe, Preston Hollow, New York. Grass-fed meats and fresh-pastured poultry served at lunch and sold in the farm store Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Heather-Ridge-Farm.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. GG Trattoria, Rhinebeck, Hudson Valley Mediterranean since 2001, expanding their farm-to-table catering with their easy, entertaining seasonal menus online for small impromptu or large gatherings, ggHudsonValley.com. and East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for information. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls. Thanks once again to our guests. We'll see you at the fun drive. Have a nice weekend. Rest up. We'll kick it off at 6 a.m. on Monday.